Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Unsigned and Independent, Episode 4. As you've hopefully heard in the first three episodes, everyone's story and journey to get to Nashville has been so different. One of the goals for Kevin on the show of Unsigned and Independent is to let the listeners know that these artists haven't always had the dream of moving to Nashville to become a musician. Leaving a steady job and choosing a path of uncertainty away from home is not easy. But on this show, these artists tell Kevin why they've never looked back with regret since moving to Nashville. Also, being on the road as an independent artist can be difficult for these musicians because they have to do everything themselves. So that's what Kevin does. He dives into some of the best and worst stories of what they've had to deal with. Please share this with a friend. It's a brand new show, Unsigned and Independent, and the artist is Tom O'Connor this week. He has a song with Luke Combs. He's a former lobbyist in Washington, D.C., turned artist, and he didn't pick up an instrument until after high school. He is unsigned and independent, and the show starts now.
Hey, this is Kevin O'Connell. Welcome back to Unsigned and Independent. This is episode 4, and on this episode, we have Tom O'Connor. Tom and I met through some mutual friends out here in Nashville at an event one night, and Tom started telling me some stories about being on the road with some artists, writing a song with Luke Combs, becoming a lobbyist, now a musician. And I had to stop him in his tracks and I said, hey, hold on, I got a podcast coming. I'd love for you to be on it, man. Let's get together. Let's sit down. And we finally got to do that. So I think you'll enjoy this. Tom's a great guy. He's got great music. Make sure you follow him on social media at Tom O'Connor Music. Make sure you follow me as well at Kickoff Kevin. And thanks for supporting the first three episodes of Unsigned and Independent. Make sure you share these on social media as well and support these artists, support their music. They're on a grind, and it's really cool to hear their stories. And with that being said, let's get to episode 4 with Tom O'Connor. Tom, what's going on, man? How you doing today?
Good. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, doing good. Thanks for coming on here. Glad we get to sit down. We've been trying to do this for a little while now.
Yeah.
A few months, and we finally got it on the books, and look at us. Here we are.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So I want to dive right into your story here, Tom. You're from New York, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, being... Binghamton?
Yeah.
Is that how you say that?
Yep, Binghamton, New York.
Okay, okay.
Kind of like smack dab in the middle of the state, you know, like an hour south of Syracuse and then an hour north of Scranton, Pennsylvania, where they make the office.
Okay, well, how long have you been in Nashville then?
I've been in Nashville. I just hit my 9-year anniversary.
9 years, yes. Almost a decade.
I know.
Has it flown by so far?
Yeah, it's so fast. I mean, it seems like just yesterday I was moving here. And I mean, I look at the clock and or the calendar and the clock.
Same thing.
And I'm like, it just flew by.
When you first moved here, did you come here for a reason or did you just move here and just say, hey, I'm just going to give this a shot? What was your mindset?
Yeah, 100%. Kind of a little weird backstory. I used to be a lobbyist in Washington, D.C.
What?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy story. I mean, I tell most people here and they look at me like I have two heads and then they think it's like super interesting. But yeah, I came out of college and I moved to Washington, D.C. and worked in government affairs. And I did that for a little while. And music was kind of a hobby at that point. And I had started kind of doing what I would call like the Virginia rock thing. you know, influenced by like the Dave Matthews and the John Mayers and everything that I was doing there. And it evolved as to much more than a hobby, and started kind of doing like the 95 corridor thing. And we were playing shows from like Boston down to Charlotte and on the weekends and kind of being the weekend warrior. That just kind of took off as much more than a hobby. And I knew kind of Nashville was the place to be. You know, I initially came here to be a writer. I thought the artist kind of thing was had passed me by. And then, you know, I came down here and got into some good circles and was with like Luke Combs and Tyler Reeve and Rob Snyder and Channing Wilson early on. And it really kind of opened the door to be an artist again or pursue that as something legitimate.
Did they tell you, hey, you should get into back being an artist, or did it kind of just come on your own?
It kind of came on my own. I mean, like when I first came down here the first year or two, all I did was write and I missed playing. But the opportunities presented themselves and the climate completely changed. I mean, you know, I'm a bigger bearded guy. So it's like, hey, like when I came here, it was like kind of the pretty boy thing and the bro country thing. And, but I think, you know, guys like Luke Combs and Chris Stapleton changed all of that. And it became much more about, you know, songs and performance and vibe and relating to, you know, kind of everyday blue collar culture. And it just broadened the genre, and it wasn't kind of just always the beachy feel good, you know, tailgate thing. And, you know, and I think that opened the door for it. And I had a lot of other artists that I was friends with around town and some big artists, and they encouraged me to get out and start playing again and put out some music of my own. And, you know, luckily we put a little project out in 2017 and it blew up, you know, beyond my wildest dreams. But that kind of really paved the way for where we're at now.
And that project you're talking about was a song with Luke Combs, is that correct?
Yeah, it was a 6-song EP that we put out, and Luke and I and Ray Fulcher co-wrote one of the songs on there, and he was gracious enough to sing on it, and it was probably the perfect time, kind of right before Hurricane hit number one, his first number one, and it really kind of blew up virally. We put that out with no promotion or no nothing. I just kind of wanted to have music out so that if I went out and played a show with, you know, a pal or opened up a show, that I had, you know, some music for people to take home with them or consume. And, you know, it just kind of blew up, really.
That song, it's called Deserve, is that correct? Well, that's a song on the EP with Luke Combs.
Yeah. That's the one that's definitely done the best.
I was going to say, that's obviously your biggest song, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ask Luke to sing on that with you, or did he say, hey, I'm going to do this with you?
I asked him, yeah. Okay. It was, we had written it together, and he sang on the demo, and I was like, man, I think I'm going to put this song out, and recorded it, and I said, man, I really love the way he sang it. I said, I wonder if he would do it with me. I asked, and graciously he agreed to do it, or he let me put it out, and you know, it kind of went from there. You know, the one agreement that I made with them was that I, you know, wouldn't push it to radio as a single or anything, and you know, which, you know, I was totally cool with. That wasn't even on my radar, you know.
Yeah So that was pre Luke Combs of what he is today, right? I mean, he was
it was right as it was taking off, you know. Like, I think I put that song out in February of 2017. And we were all together in Key West in May at the Key West Songwriters Festival. And Hurricane had just hit number one 3 months later when we were, you know, when we were all together down there. And, you know, so I think it was out on radio at that time when I put it out. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, nobody, you know, everybody knew Luke was going to be awesome and he was going to be very successful, but I don't think anybody thought.
That's what I was going to ask. And not that
well, it was going to be, you know, to the,
right.
I'm the not, stature it is
I was
now.
Gonna say, I'm
the
not going to make
thing
this,
in the world.
I'm not going to make this a Luke Combs thing, but I just think it's interesting getting a perspective from yours where you were with him before, you're songwriting with him before.
Yeah.
And he's a down to earth guy. He's been in here in the studio before.
Sure.
He's known as a great guy. So I just want to get your perspective as far as when you're writing songs with him before he ever blew up, and then you're sitting there and then you see his success take off and you've had your own success, but different kind of success.
Mm-hmm.
What's that been like for you to see that happen on your side?
It's incredible just to even have been a small part of whatever that journey is or that he's been on. And it's definitely provided inspiration for me and probably a million other people in this town, you know, to pursue this. And it's pretty incredible, to be honest.
That's pretty awesome. Because not a lot of people can say that.
No.
You know, you can't say, I mean, I was sitting with Luke Combs 6-7 years ago writing songs with him, and here he is, and he's still inspiring me till this day. Because I can see it in your, you know, in your face and hear it in your voice where you know, it's a big part of your life, I guess, as part of, as a musician.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And he's paved the way for a lot of, you know, a lot of not necessarily, you know, mainstream artists. I think, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Well, going back to your lobbyist days, I wanted to ask you, what are some similarities and differences then, like the music industry compared to the DC lobbyist, the good and the bad? You know, do you see any similarities or differences, or did that help you at all?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a networking town. And you know, the DC, the whole DC, I don't even know what you want to call it nowadays, but mm-hmm. It's all networking. It's all about relationships and, music industry and really all industries is, you know, it's all about the relationships and networking, I think. Definitely a little bit more cutthroat in DC, and I'm certainly glad I'm not there now. The political climate is much different than it was when I was there. But yeah, certainly similarities in terms of you have to realize that everything is a business for one, if you're going to do it for a living. I think that kind of makes you treat the music industry as, you know, hey, it's like I'm here in Nashville now. This isn't just like a hobby anymore. You know, there really is a business behind it and a massive machine behind it. And I think that, you know, being in DC sort of kind of prepared you for that, and certainly not on the same level, but you know, definitely some similarities for sure.
Was that eye opening to you when you moved to Nashville and you realize, okay, yeah, this is a business as well. This isn't just, you know, we're going to go out and play for fun. And, or did you already know that, have that mindset coming in?
I had that mindset coming in. The one thing that I think I didn't anticipate was, you know, if you live in Nashville, there's like no escape. I mean, everywhere you go, it's, you know, it turns into music business at some point, you know,
yeah.
Like if you go out to the bar and have a couple drinks, you're definitely going to end up talking, music business or shop with somebody. I mean, you know, or if you go out to dinner, you're going to bump into somebody, or pretty much everywhere you go, like you can't really get away from it. Yeah. So that was definitely an adjustment. And I think the other thing too is like when you realize when you're not writing necessarily just for it to be cathartic or to be, you know, just for fun, you know, when you have to go write every day, and, you know, certainly times that it's you realize that it's a business and that, you know, hey, this is my job. But on the same token, it's like, this is my job.
Mm-hmm.
How amazing is this? You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd certainly much rather be doing this than anything else, than, you know, being stuck behind a desk or, you know, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you had your Broadway days out here yet? Did you do that early on?
No.
You don't really play there, do you?
I don't do Broadway. I feel like I kind of did that before I moved here. I played a lot of the cover bar gigs,
okay.
You know, and I, you know, when I came here, you know, like I said, I just kind of wanted to be a writer at first, and, I didn't want to do the Broadway thing, man. It's a grind. Cheers to the guys that do it.
Mm.
And you know, you can make a good living doing that. And it's just, you know, I don't know, just, I want to play my songs and, you know, do my thing. And, you know, that's not for me.
Interesting. Cause you're the first person I've had on here where you've never really played on Broadway, not been bad or part of your stick, I guess, which is to each their own. So has that been a struggle for you at all? Cause I know you make a killing on Broadway, but you have the mindset of you want to play what you want to play and not just cover songs the whole time.
Yeah.
So is that also a popular thing out here? Do artists come out here and have that mindset, or are you kind of the only guy that you've talked to over the years?
No, I think there's many different paths to, you know, success in this industry or to make it work for you. And, you know, I think just like anything else right now, you want to diversify, you know, your income streams and, do little things and what makes you happy. And I think there's a lot of people that came here and had the same mentality, or maybe were even more stubborn than I was, and didn't want to compromise at all. And, you know, some of those people were able to find their way through it, and some of those people are not here anymore. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's the other thing is, you know, being here 10 years, there's so many people that came to do this, that are gone. You see so many people come and gone. And, you know, yeah, I think there's a bunch of different paths. I don't know if that answered the question. I think we kind of got a little off, but.
No, that's all right, though. But, I mean, it's just interesting to hear that because, like I said, you're the first person I've heard say that. So it's a different path, which is,
yeah,
it's cool to hear. Like Broadway's not the only way to try to make it out here.
Yeah, and I think there's plenty of people that didn't and don't and have incredible careers.
You've been on a lot of tours.
I don't know if I've been on a lot of tours. I've been out on a lot of shows with a lot of different people. Or okay. At least not full tours.
Okay, maybe not yours, I'm saying. Yeah. But you've been on, okay, let me rephrase that. You've been on the road a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, right?
Yes.
And you've had countless nights, I'm sure, good and bad.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to ask, what pops in your head when I say, hey, what is probably the worst night that you've had on the road where you thought to yourself, like, is this really what I want to do? Like, did I really pursue the right thing here? Do you have a good story for that?
Yeah, I probably have a couple. there's been a lot of them over the years.
Yeah, I'm sure.
This is one thing, too, is like, you know, especially being an independent artist, like being on the road, you have to anticipate that everything that can go wrong will. And, you know, at times it does, sometimes more often than you'd like. We had one recently where, you know, we flew out to Austin and the headliner that we were playing with, I don't want to say who it was, but they canceled the show while we were in soundcheck. And, you know, I flew a band out and had hotels and expenses and, you know, got hit on that one pretty hard. And
you booked all that yourself, right?
And I booked that all myself, yeah. So there was that one. I was out on the road a couple of years ago with William Clark Green and Josh Abbott, and I had drove up to play the show, and it was just an acoustic, and I think I drove up to Ohio, and we were at the Dusty Armadillo, and that was the first show of the run, and we were playing in Indy the next day at 8 Second Saloon, and I drove with all my gear and everything, and they said, hey, why don't you ride the bus with us? And I was like, how am I going to get back and get my car? And, you know, after a few drinks and hanging out after the show, they're like, oh, we'll worry about it later. And Will's tour manager actually, or his manager actually got me a flight home from Indy or back to Ohio to get my car. And, you know, we went and, you know, continued to party on the bus on the way to Indianapolis and, you know, really had a miserable next day. And, finally, you know, go to fly back to Indy, and I'm looking at my flight. I'm like, cool, I'm going to get back there a reasonable hour. I can drive home to Nashville, only to see that the flight had me, because it was probably the cheapest flight, had bounced me around. Oh, I flew to Charlotte and then Atlanta and then back up to Cleveland, and then had to take a pretty expensive Uber from the airport to the venue to get my car. And then I was like, now I got to drive home. Ugh. And it was, that one made me question. And I'm like, I don't, you know.
Have you ever hit that point where you're like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this, or are you in this for good, you think?
I'm always going to do it. I think we all tell ourselves that and get to that point at different times. And that was kind of one of the other things that I discovered when I came here and being friends with a lot of bigger artists and people across the spectrum of the industry is like, I always thought that, like, hey, if you got to a certain point and you were successful and you were making money and making your living, that, you know, that goes away. And it doesn't. I've talked to some of the biggest artists on the planet, and they, you know, they have doubts at times. I hear them confide in me at different times and be like, hey, I don't know if I should do this anymore. I think I'm done, or this or that. And, you know, some of these people are mega, mega successful. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that, you know, it's, hey, that's just natural. In the industry that we're in, it's always a roller coaster. It's not your regular 9-to-5 job. So, you know, there's a lot of highs and lows. So I think on some level, I'll always question it, but I know deep down I'll always do it.
You like that roller coaster, though?
I don't know if anybody loves that part of it.
But you almost have to have a different mindset. You have to know and thrive off of it, the ups and the downs and the yes and the no's.
Yeah, you totally have to adapt and learn to be okay with it.
Right.
You know, I've come a long way. I wouldn't say I'm 100% there, but I don't know if anybody is.
Is that something that have you developed that at all? Like, has it gotten, like, thicker skin for that over the years?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and you have to have it if you want to do music. I mean, you just have to. I mean, because you're going to hear no way more than you're going to have a yes, or there's going to be 100 things that you do wrong before you get a really good moment, or, you know what I mean? But, I mean, you just have to take a lot of that criticism or no's with a grain of salt and, you know, take the emotion out of it. Sometimes it stings when somebody says something like right in the beginning, but if you take the step back after the, you know, the initial shock of somebody saying something or not liking something, you know, oftentimes they're right about their feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that over the years. I think that's part of it too, is like when somebody tells you something, it's not because they're trying to put you down. They are really trying to point out why. You know,
it's like, not personal.
Hey, no. And you have to make it not personal. And that's the hardest thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Especially when it comes to what we do, because we're creative and we're sensitive and like, it's like, hey, you know, it means you think it's the best thing in the world, and somebody's like, nah, you know?
You're independent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you plan on sticking with, staying with, or are you feeling it out and riding the wave as it goes and if something comes along?
I'm taking it as it comes. I mean, I certainly would love to find the right partners. I've had a lot of different opportunities over the years to work with different folks, and it just hasn't been the right fit for me and for what I want to do. And I've had the luxury of, you know, being able to make a living and being able to make enough revenue off of what I'm doing that anybody that I kind of partner with, I want it to be a partnership, and I want them to have, you know, believe in what I'm doing and be able to take it to the next level and do something with it. I think more so in the last few years, I think I certainly have spent the first part of my time in Nashville kind of finding my identity and, you know, developing my craft and getting to the point where I think I'm, you know, a package that's ready to succeed with somebody else, you know? Mm-hmm. So definitely open to working with other, you know, whether it be labels or whether it be whoever.
Mm.
Yeah.
If the right opportunity comes along.
Absolutely. You never want to take the wrong deal. I've seen too many people in this town, you know, sign the wrong record deals or work with the wrong people and they're screwed and their career is pretty much over, or they're, you know, on hiatus for years because they, you know, they got in bed with the wrong folks.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens quite often, actually, out here.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business.
Yeah.
And it can get ugly.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on with you in the future here? In the near future, you got anything big planned or?
Yeah.
Got any singles or music coming out, anything like that?
Yeah, so I just finished a project with the producer Paul Ebersol, who just did the Morgan Wade record with Sadler. And he did all the Three Doors Down stuff back in the day, and Sister Hazel, and a lot of this 90s rock stuff that I really love too, and is heavily influenced in my music. So we just did a project, literally just finished it, hoping to put out the first song, I would say, in the first quarter of next year. Really excited for people to hear it. I think it's the best stuff that I've ever done or ever put out.
I want to leave you with this final question here, because you're a guy that had a completely different path that you're going down, being a lobbyist in Washington, yeah, D.C., and now you're making music and performing in Nashville for the last 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have to say if somebody's listening to this and, you know, they're doing a job that they just don't really enjoy and they want to go pursue something, whether it's music or anything else, what would your advice to them be?
Life is too short. Go do it. I mean, you know, save up as much money as you can where you're at and make the jump. And, you know, if you really love it and you really believe in it, you'll make it work. You know, I mean, if that means working side jobs or doing, you know, whatever it takes, you know, borrowing money from, you know, family or friends or whatever, just to get yourself off the ground. But yeah, just go all in. I mean, I think one of my biggest regrets was not doing it sooner. Mm-hmm. You know, I was afraid to jump from that, you know, 9-to-5 job where I had the security of health insurance and regular salary. And, you know, I waited probably a couple years too long, in my opinion, but, you know, just do it. I don't have any regrets looking back. I should have done it, other than not doing it soon.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I really, life's too short, man.
Do
what makes you happy, you know? And it's, you know, life's not always about the biggest paycheck. And, you know, if you love what you do, I mean, quality and happiness in life is a whole lot more important.
Love it. Love it. Couldn't have said it any better myself. Tom, I appreciate you coming in here. If you're on social media, make sure you follow him at Tom O'Connor Music. Is that correct?
Yep. All O's, no E's.
All O's, no E's. Yeah, I love it. Like I said, O'Connor, we got the Irish boys in here, man. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we got to do this.
Of course, of course. Best of luck with everything moving forward. Looking forward to all your work in the future here. And let's do this again sometime.
Definitely. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa. And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.